Beyond the first line of trees that screened a small clearing beside the steep, winding grade that formed the eastern upslope to Palo Flechado Pass, Moose Redacre, Gabe Tucker, Buell Ormsley, and Abe Voss watched two riders walk their mounts past their observation point. When the pair, a young wet-behind-the-ears kid and an older man, had ridden well out of hearing range, Moose Redacre elbowed Buell Ormsley in the ribs.
"Didn't I tell you? When I first seen him, I knew that bigger fella was Smoke Jensen. We're looking at better than $5,000 reward on the hoof."
Abe Voss cocked an eye.
"Now, you sure those flyers are still in force?"
"They ain't been taken up, have they?"
"That don't mean someone will pay up after all this time."
"Sure they will. And even if they don't, killing that holier-than-thou gunfighter will be pure satisfaction in itself. He's done collected too many bounties that should have been ours by rights. Besides, it'll do a whole lot for our reputation. Now, ain't that so, Gabe?"
Gabe Tucker showed a grin of crooked, green-fringed yellow teeth.
"Right as rain, Moose. Hey, how are we going about this?"
"Those flyers all say he's wanted dead or alive, right?"
Moose paused and put a hand to his wide chin, which hung below a lantern jaw.
"Do any of you hanker to manhandle alive and kicking, Smoke Jensen?"
Buell Ormsley scratched at his fringe of ginger hair that surrounded his bald crown.
"Not this lad. My mama never raised no idiots."
She come mighty close. "Yep, I reckon we'd do best to just shoot him in the back and haul his body up north, Montana way."
Buell Ormsley squeezed his bulbous nose.
"Whew, when you get to stinking a lot, we do that?"
"Well, not if we go by train and ice him down."
"Then let's get at it."
"Don't be in such a hurry. We gotta do up a plan first."
"What about the boy?"
"Oh, that's easy. Kill him and leave him for the buzzards."
Ian McGregor had dropped back to tighten a loose cinch and relieve a swollen bladder. His horse stood stubbornly sideways in the trail now. When he swung aboard, he got a quick glimpse of four grim-faced men riding toward him at a fast pace. Swiftly, he turned the animal's head and put spurs to its flanks. Behind him, the evil quartet put their mounts into a gallop as well. Rapid reaction by Moose Redacre prevented Abe Voss from firing a shot at the boy and revealing their presence for certain. As it happened, they might as well have shot anyway. When Mac came within hailing distance of Smoke, he called out a warning.
"Look out! Smoke! Four hard-looking guys headed our way!"
He reined smartly to the side and disappeared behind a large boulder. Redacre and his crew of ne'er-do-well bounty hunters crested a rise that had separated them from their quarry and found the boy gone from sight. The four of them faced a lone Smoke Jensen. Had their combined intelligence been anywhere near average, the fact might have given them more than a little pause to consider. But since it was not, they blundered on, drawing their six guns as they came. Smoke waited patiently. The moment the first eager lout came within range, Smoke cut him down with a round from his Winchester Express rifle. Abe Voss flew from the saddle while still far out of revolver range. Smoke's deadly accurate rifle spoke again, and a 500 grain 45 slug sped downrange. Moose Redacre had accurately gauged Smoke Jensen's intentions and ducked low just at the precise moment. Distance was decreasing, which led encouragement to the bounty hunters. Gabe Tucker jinked to the left and rode into the meadow to that side. He sought to flank Smoke Jensen and get in a good shot. He made it half the distance to his goal. An invisible fist slammed into his right side and knocked him out of the saddle. He hit in a shower of broken turf and rolled to a halt, faced away from Smoke Jensen. The burning pain began to fade to the numbness of shock. Buell Ormsley angled toward the cluster of boulders and let fly with two fast rounds. Smoke Jensen reared back in his saddle and then bent forward. He put the rifle back in its scabbard and came up with a six gun. That bullet didn't have the power to kill, but it did hurt like hell when it punched through the leather vest Ormsley wore and broke a rib. Reflex action sent him out of the saddle and onto the ground. Moose Redacre closed within killing distance of Smoke Jensen. Both men fired at the same time. Both their slugs missed. But Smoke's missed by so narrow a margin that a hot line burned along the rib cage of Moose Redacre. Moose fired again. The slug punched through the side panel of Smoke's vest. That brought an instant response. Another 45 rounds spat from the peacemaker in Smoke's hand. This one struck Moose in the chest with stunning force. Moose died, wondering how that could happen. Meanwhile, Buell Ormsley scooted over the ground toward his dropped six gun. He'd quickly discovered that he had sprained an ankle in his fall from the horse. Buell reached the weapon while Smoke scanned the other three for any sign of continued resistance. Carefully, he raised it and sighted in on the broad back of Smoke Jensen. He eared back the hammer of the Merwin and Holbert 44. The side of Buell's skull flew apart in gory shards. Ian McGregor rode out onto the trail, Smoke still curling from the barrel of the old Schofield Smith 44 in his left hand.
He was gonna back shoot you, Smoke.
You done good, Mac. Saved my life, that's for sure. I'm beholden to you.
Shucks, you'd have done the same for me.
Yeah, thanks all the same. I wonder if it's worth the effort to take this trash along and see if there's a bounty on him.
Do you think there might be?
You never know.
Smoke searched the body of Moose Redacre and found the aged, out-of-date posters depicting his own face. Also, a letter signed 6 years earlier giving a commission to one Albert Redacre to seek out wanted miscreants under the auspice of the Sheriff of Denton County, Texas.
Still don't mean they're free of any head money.
If it's all the same, I'd just as soon not have them along for company.
Smoke noticed that Mac looked a little gray-green around the mouth.
First time you killed a man?
First time I ever even shot at one.
Well, take it from me, Mac. It don't get any easier. Only your reaction to it changes. We'd best cover them with rocks and mark them so the nearest law can find them.
Sometime later, on a hill overlooking Taos, New Mexico territory, Smoke Jensen considered their course of action from this point on. He turned to Ian McGregor.
We'll enter the town from different directions. And remember, Mac, when you see me, you don't know me. Now later, when this is over, I will definitely introduce you to Diego Alvarado.
Mac had become somewhat sobered by the shootout on the trail.
Smoke? How do I make contact when I learn anything important?
If there's a time, send a letter to Paul Jones, care of General Delivery in Taos, giving a time and place. If not, break off from Satterley's men and ride like the wind for town.
Sounds simple enough. Why Paul Jones?
More likely to slip past anyone Satterley might have watching the mail.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Did you learn all this to be a marshal?
No. A lot I figured out on my own. Some preacher taught me. And the rest I got from lawmen like our sheriff back in the High Lonesome. Monte Carson is mighty savvy about such things. Now, get on your way. I'll give you 20 minutes and then ride in.
Pablo Alvarado, third son of Diego Alvarado, strolled into the cool interior of the Bajo El Cielo de Mexico Cantina in Taos during the busy noon hour. The ever-present muslin sheeting drooped from the rafters, placed there to prevent unwelcome visits by the scorpions and other insects that inhabited the palm thatch roofing. Men lined the bar, gustily drinking down their cellar-cooled beer while they munched industriously on plates of taquitos, rolled corn tortillas filled with roast shredded goat meat and crisp fried. Others consumed small clay cups of caldo de camarón, thick dark red chili shrimp soup made of tiny dried shrimp, onions, garlic, tomato paste, and hot chilies. All of them frequently dipped tortilla chips into bowls of freshly made pico de gallo salsa, redolent with the aroma of chopped chilies, garlic, and fresh coriander. Nearly half of the patrons were gringos. Pablo joined three vaqueros from his father's estancia, Rancho de la Gloria. He soon had a tall, slender glass of beer, called a tubo, in one hand. With his other, Pablo lifted a taquito from a plate. His presence was immediately noted by a trio of scruffy saddle trash seated at a corner table. They bent their heads together, and the leader, Garth Thompson, eyed Pablo.
That's one of that stubborn greaser's sons. I think you two ought to arrange a little entertainment from outside this place.
eyes. Norm Oppler grinned.
That shines, Garth. What sort of party should we figure to throw?
One that will leave him definitely hurting.
Hickey Drago, the third hard case, flashed a toothy smile.
Now that sounds like fun. Do we leave him alive and hurting?
That is entirely up to you.
Both downed their drinks and came to their boots. They left the busy saloon without attracting any attention. Over at the bar, Pablo turned to the ranch hands.
We'll have to start back to the ranch after we've eaten. There seems not to be enough hours in the day.
Especially to get the work done and for you to see Juanita, eh, patron? Eh?
Pablo's eyes twinkled as he thought of his current favorite.
Juanita is worth making time for. We are going to be married. She doesn't know that yet, but I do.
Que romantico.
Do not mock true love, Arturo. Someday it will overwhelm you.
Oh, me? With a fat wife and three little ones?
Garth Thompson watched him darkly. He had been given his orders by Whitewater Patty Quinn as to what to do about the family of that stubborn old fool Diego Alvarado. The rancher refused to sell out. And his Mexican cowboys had already killed three and wounded eight of those sent to harass him. It was time to turn up the heat, Patty Quinn had said. Garth watched Pablo and the vaqueros down a prodigious quantity of food and two glasses each of beer. Then they hitched up their belts and walked toward the door. When they stepped outside, Garth strained to hear the challenge he expected. It came a moment later.
Hey! What's where you're going, greaser?
Smoke Jensen walked Cougar and Hardy down the broad eastern avenue that led to the Plaza de Armas in the center of Taos. Palo Verde trees had been planted in circular basins all along the residential section. The pale, wispy, smoky green leaves fluttered in a light breeze like the fine hair of a young woman. Most houses sat well back from the Spanish tile sidewalks, presenting high blank walls to the passerby. Some had built-in niches where flowers had been planted or religious figures installed. Red tile roofs peeked over the blue and green shards of broken bottles plastered into the tops of these ramparts. The last block before the central square had been overtaken by shops, restaurants, and cantinas.
Hey! What's where you're going, greaser?
What did you call me?
I called you a bean-slurping, chili-chumping greaser.
Smoke Jensen reined in to watch the exchange. The youth had a familiar appearance, though Smoke could not place a name with the face. Both men were armed, though the well-dressed Spanish youth chose to use his hands. With a suddenness that spoke well of his ability, he swung a balled fist that smashed into the jaw of the loudmouth saddle trash with enough force to knock him off his boots. He hit the tile walk. At once, the youth stepped over him.
I'll accept your apology for that insult, and there will be no harm done.
Like hell you will!
The thug whipped out a six-gun and fired point blank into the young man's belly. The other Anglo cleared leather. His bullet cut a searing path across the small of Pablo's back. Smoke Jensen's hand filled with a .45 Colt.
No!
The three dark-complexioned vaqueros with the youth then reacted, spreading apart with shock and surprise on their faces. One drew a knife. Norm fired again. His slug bit flesh out of the knife-wielder's side.
Drop the guns, both of you.
The Anglo opponents refused to comply. Smoke shot the seated one through the shoulder, breaking his scapula. The smoking revolver in his hand flew from his grasp. His companion spun on one boot heel to face Smoke Jensen. He raised his six-gun to shoulder height and took aim. Smoke fired his .45 a second time, taking the gunman in the center of his chest. Hickey looked down at his chest with a dumb expression of disbelief as he staggered forward. Slowly, he released his grip on his weapon. Hickey's dead body hit the tile next. By then, the wounded one seated on the tile walk recovered his Colt. He threw a shot at Smoke that cracked past the head of the mountain man to bury itself deep into an adobe wall across the street. Without a flinch, Smoke returned fire. He went over backward and twitched violently for a few seconds. During that time, the three vaqueros recovered their composure and rushed to the side of their fallen companion.
Pablo! Pablo, can you hear me?
Keeping his Colt handy, Smoke Jensen dismounted and crossed to where two of the Mexican cowboys kneeled beside their employer's son.
Is this Pablo Alvarado?
Dark, angry faces turned toward him.
What is your ask, gringo?
I'm a friend of his father.
Si, si. And I am the Pope in Rome. What is your name, gringo?
I'm Smoke Jensen.
Surprise registered on the three faces immediately. Embarrassment warred with it.
Señor Jensen, I should have known. No one else could have handled two gunmen so fast and so effectively. It is only that Don Pablo has been shot, and Ricardo. And it is forbidding us to carry our pistolas into town. We could do nothing.
And naturally that bothered you. That I can understand.
Smoke examined the wounded man.
Ricardo has only a scratch. Pablo's still breathing, and he has a strong heartbeat. But he still needs help right away. One of you had better go for a doctor.
I am Miguel Amiguita. I will go.
Good, Miguel. And someone should ride to the ranch and tell Don Diego.
There's a wagon with supplies.
Ricardo can drive that after he's patched up. Then you can take a fast horse and head for Rancho de la Gloria.
Si.
The town marshal and the sheriff of Taos County arrived at the same time. Pablo Alvarado remained unconscious, and two of the vaqueros had sped off on their assigned tasks. An angry and shaken Garth Thompson, who had only now come out of the saloon, leaned against the outside adobe wall of Bajo de Cielo de Mexico, scowling at Smoke Jensen.
This stranger come along and shot two of my men for no reason at all. Shot the Mexican kid as well.
The sheriff and marshal drew their weapons. The marshal motioned to Smoke.
I'll take that iron. You got some tall explaining to do, mister. Since this involves folks from outside town, I'll let you handle it, Hank. I better see to a doctor for young Alvarado.
I've already sent for a doctor.
I'll take those guns, feller.
Smoke complied, giving the sheriff both of his Colts. Soon, the doctor arrived and arranged to move Pablo to his office and bandaged Ricardo. Hank Banner took Smoke Jensen off to jail.
Sit down and tell me something about yourself. Do you regularly go around shooting men without the least provocation?
Smoke Jensen declined the chair for the moment. Being uncertain as to which side the lawman happened to be on, he didn't use his real name, nor did he show his U.S. Marshal's badge. Nor did he use the cover name he had given to Ian McGregor.
Let's get one thing straight first, Sheriff. I did not shoot Pablo Alvarado. My name is Frank Hickman, and I do go around shooting people who shoot friends of mine.
You're a friend of the Alvarados?
I am.
Why is it I don't believe you?
I could give you a couple of reasons.
Try me.
You could be one of those folks who dislikes people of Spanish or Mexican origin and is unwilling to believe any white man could be friends with them. Or you could be one of those lawmen who has taken some, consideration from a powerful man.
Banner clenched his fist and looked ready to swing on Smoke. Smoke raised a staying hand.
Now sit down, Sheriff. I apologize for baiting you that way. What is it you want to know?
Everything that happened out there. Start from the first.
I was riding into town when those two provoked a quarrel with Pablo Alvarado. At that time, I didn't recognize Pablo. It's been quite some time since I last saw him.
People usually don't change that much.
They do if they were 10 the last time someone saw them.
That makes sense. Go on.
Smoke Jensen related the events surrounding the shooting of Pablo Alvarado. Then, he described what he did. When he concluded, the two men sat a long while in silence. At last, the sheriff spoke up.
So you intervened in defense of Pablo Alvarado? He was armed, I saw that.
The one who shot him first didn't even call him out. He just drew and fired away. The other one tried to backshoot Pablo.
Yeah, you said that. I think I understand. What I don't follow is why you stepped in at all.
Because I have a big problem with sneaks and backshooters. Both of them drew on the boy. Pablo's men were unarmed. I could do something about it, so I did.
Sheriff?
Smoke looked over to see a boy of 10 standing there, his head crowned with a thick thatch of sandy brown hair. His gray-green eyes sparkled with intelligence above speckled cheeks and a wide, generous mouth. Oblivious of Smoke's scrutiny, the lad concentrated on the lawman.
What is it, Wally?
Doc Walters says Pablo Alvarado is awake now. He's ready to make a statement, but you have to come over to Doc's office.
Thank you, Wally.
Banner flipped a nickel to the boy and cut his eyes to smoke.
I think you should come along. If Pablo can identify you, I'll be satisfied with your account of what happened.
Smoke figured the Frank Hickman name was just about to be out of the barn. He smiled evenly at Banner.
Whatever you say, Sheriff.
Dr. Adams Walter had his office and infirmary on the entire second floor above a men's haberdashery and a woman's clothier. Smoke Jensen followed Sheriff Hank Banner up the steep flight of stairs and through a white-painted door. The odor of ether and carbolic acid hung heavy in the still air of the interior. Dr. Walters greeted the men with surgical tools in hand, which he scrubbed at energetically.
Well, Pablo got lucky this time, Hank. It was a clean, through-and-through shot to the side. Missed his intestines and liver. He just got a scratch across his back. I cleaned the wounds, closed, and sutured them. I'd say he's a sure bet to recover. He's awake now and asking for you.
He nodded towards Smoke.
Who's this?
Says he's a friend of the Alvarados.
Well, you can come in then.
They found Pablo Alvarado propped up on pillows, the sheet and quilt folded down to his waist. His bare middle was swathed in bandages. He looked up as they entered and broke out in a big smile.
Smoke! You came like Papa said you would. Sheriff, it's good to see you.
Smoke?
I'm afraid I wasn't entirely truthful with you, Sheriff. My name is Smoke Jensen.
The hell you say? The Smoke Jensen?
Yeah, the only one I know. I needed to find out whose side you're on before letting out too much.
Uh-huh. Everything I've heard about you argues to that. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Jensen. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to talk to Pablo alone.
Ah, sure.
So, what do you have for me, Pablo?
I know those ladrones who shot me, Sheriff. They run with a gang led by Paddy Quinn. They didn't give me a chance. They just drew and fired on me.
How the hell did Smoke Jensen get involved?
I'm not sure. I was down by then. What's certain is he saved my life. Smoke is an old friend of my father.
I see. Well, that may well be. But not every card is on the table as yet. I'll keep Jensen around till everything's straightened out.
Where? In jail?
Where else?
Late in the afternoon, Don Diego Alvarado, accompanied by Miguel Armillita, arrived at the jail. He confronted Hank Banner at his desk. The pencil-thin line of black mustache on Diego's upper lip writhed with his agitation.
Why is this that you have my good friend Smoke Jensen in jail? I insist that you release him at once.
Now, why in the hell should I do that? Two men have been killed. Your son has been shot.
First, because Smoke is a valued friend. I will vouch for him. And because I sent for him to look into the matters we have discussed. Clifton Satterley owns the judges, half of the legislature, and nearly as many lawmen. If not for you and Marshal Gates, there would be no one opposing him.
Hank Banner came to his boots.
Good enough for me. He's as free as a bird, amigo. I'll go get him.
Within a minute, Diego was greeting his old friend Smoke. He assured Smoke that Banner was an honest man. Then Smoke showed the sheriff his badge and covered the reason for being in Taos.
I have to ask you to keep this an absolute secret between us, Sheriff.
You have my word on it. And I wish you luck. But whatever happens, let me advise you had better not operate outside the law.
Sheriff, in my world, I found it wise to always shoot the bear before the critter could wrap his arms around me.
What does that mean?
When a fellow's dealing with a rattler, he doesn't pay much attention to any rules that protect the snake.
Oh, see.
Well, now, Don Diego and I have a lot of catching up to do.
Diego went first to see his son. Then he directed Smoke around the town to proudly show off the improvements that had taken place in the absence of the mountain man. He waved an arm expansively at an adobe building with a second story of clapboard siding. A large bell stood in the bare yard outside.
We have a new school now, a secondary school, amigo. In my modest way, I contributed to its construction.
and established an account in the bank to which others contribute to provide pay for the teachers. There are only 4 qualified ones now. The other 3 are volunteers from among the merchants. Alejandro teaches Spanish when he can get away from the rancho. It is all very exciting, no?
Yes, it is. How is Alejandro and all your other children?
Healthy, thanks be to God. To my way of thinking, living in town robs a man of vigor and his years. My next to youngest Lupe, who is 8, still breaks the thin spring ice from the Rijuelo to swim, like her brothers before her. Gracias a Dios. She will live a long life. I myself have 52 years.
Wow, I don't believe it, Don Diego.
Don Diego Alvarado looked far from 52, more like a young 40. His full mane of longish black hair showed only thin streaks of gray at the temples, and his face remained unlined, save the effects of sun, wind, and cold. Trim and fit, he could not weigh more than 150 pounds. He wore his traje corto on a 5'9" frame with an elegance that made others appear common and shabby. Dressed all in brown today, his Cordovan sombrero sat his head at a rakish angle. The bolero jacket, adorned with small silver conchos, rode the midline of a scarlet sash around his waist, above flared cuff trousers with wide gussets of satin in matching color to his girdle. A snowy shirt with lace-trimmed pleats appeared above his vest. His string tie stood out in starched erectness, rather than the usual limp droop. Altogether, he represented a fine rendering of the man Smoke had known 10 years earlier.
I saw the new houses to the east.
Yes. So many children being born and so few jobs on the ranches. They come to town to work in the fine homes of the rich gringos and Mexicans, and to make more babies.
Nature has a way of doing such things. What else is new since my last visit?
Come, I will show you. We have an opera house, opened last year. At last I can hear my beloved music. Handel, Mozart, Bach, and of course the classic Spanish composers. We will stop at the theater first. Then we shall stop at La Comida Buena for something to eat before heading to the ranch.
Seated at a rickety table in the Bloody Hills Road Ranch outside Taos, Whitewater Paddy Quinn listened in stony silence to the report of his lieutenant, Garth Thompson. 2 men killed. Gunned down, according to Garth, by a saddle tramp who looked to be about 40 or so.
Impossible!
No. Norm Oppler and Hickey Drago weren't exactly the fastest and the best. I didn't see the shooting myself. I came out of the saloon after it was over. Like to have knocked me out of my boots. He must have called him out with a gun already in his hand. Don't see any other way.
Well, now I'm wondering. What was it they were doing to get themselves killed?
Young Pablo Alvarado came into the cantina with some of his vaqueros. That Miguel Armayita was amongst them. You know the one.
Him that gives those disgusting bullfight demonstrations, is it? Bloody damn barbarian, says I. Shorting cows is for giving milk and eating, not for bloody sport.
You gotta kill a cow to eat it, right?
Well, that's a fact, Garth, me boy.
When this Armayita kills a bull, he gives the meat to the sisters at the mission to distribute to the poor. So it's not a waste.
Oh, you're talking like you approve of that deviltry. Is that it now?
No. It's only the man's courage that I admire. It takes a lot to stand out on the sand with nothing but a cloth in your hand in front of half a ton of raging animal that has 2-foot-long horns.
A twinkle in the eyes of Paddy Quinn betrayed his true opinion, contrary to that which he spoke.
Cowards. The lot of them greasers.
Would you do it?
Hell no! You think me a bloody fool? Still, I want to know what those 2 were up to.
You said to put pressure on Alvarado. So I sent Oppler and Drago to pick a fight with Pablo. They did, and they shot him. But he didn't die.
Something has to be done about the shooting of our boys. This stranger has to be taught a lesson, made an example of, don't you know?
I'll send Luke and Grassi to keep an eye on him. I heard before I left town that the sheriff let him out of jail. Seems he's a friend of the Alvarados.
Sure, and I'd not lose any sleep if something happened to old man Alvarado. Maybe we ought to get together enough of our lads to have a go at both of them.
Garth Thompson gave a steady look at his boss. Paddy Quinn had a deceptively cherubic Irish face. He was always smiling, even when he killed a man. He was big for a victim of the potato famine, standing 5'10", with about 158 pounds behind his belt. His ears and nose were small, and his mouth was only wide when he smiled. A shock of glistening black hair hung over a high forehead. Without his brace of 45 Colt Peacemakers and the 38 Smith & Wesson he carried for a hideout, he could easily pass for a shopkeeper. Garth knew better, though. Went on the prod, the fit, trim, hard-muscled Quinn virtually exploded into violent mania, calmed only by a frenzy of bloodletting. Odd, Garth speculated, that Quinn, of all people, would object to the violence and spectacle of bullfighting. But then, the man who had hired the gang did have a fondness for pussycats. There was just no telling, Garth figured.
Where do we wait for them?
Here, to begin with. Then it depends on what Luke and Grasser report. Get on it then, Bucko.
Smoke Jensen recognized the type the moment Luke Horner and Charlie Grasser tied off their horses at the tie rail outside the saloon across the street from La Comida Buena. As always, Diego Alvarado had shown impeccable taste in his choice of a place to eat. The formal dinner, Smoke knew from experience, would come at around 9:30 that night at the ranch. It would be preceded by a steady flow of tequila and beer and served with fine wines. His pleasure diminished when the two hard cases arrived. He nodded to the street, and Diego paused in his mastication to look over his shoulder.
You see that pair? That's more trouble on the hoof, or I miss my guess.
That's true, my friend. Though they are obviously, how you say, small fry.
Where the fingerlings swim, the bigger fishes are close behind.
Do you think they came to finish with Pablo?
No. I think whoever sent the first two has someone else in mind.
Meaning you?
Yeah, and perhaps you. Well, old friend, let's finish up. We don't want to disappoint them.
Luke Horner leaned against an upright 4x4 post that supported the canopy over the saloon. He swiveled his head constantly, alert for a sight of the familiar figure of Diego Alvarado. When the subject of their surveillance appeared suddenly outside the restaurant, Luke turned his head away and alerted his companion.
Shit, Grasser, there they are, right across from us. I say we take them right now, you game?
Charlie Grasser came upright in the chair made from a small barrel and peered across at the two men.
I'm not so sure, Luke. Didn't Garth say that that feller was as fast as greased lightning?
So what? He caught the boys unaware. There's two of us, and he can't be all that fast. That old greaser won't be able to shoot very well. I think we ought to do it.
Luke pushed away from the post and stepped out into the street. Not nearly so eager, Charlie Grasser separated from his companion and did the same. Luke jabbed an extended left forefinger toward Smoke Jensen, his right hand already on the butt of a six-gun.
Hey, mister, you killed two friends of mine. I don't take kind of that. I'm here to make you pay for it.
Luke Horner went for his Colt, but Smoke Jensen bested him anyway. The 45 Peacemaker appeared in his hand as if by magic, the hammer fully cocked. As the muzzle leveled on the center of Luke's body, Smoke triggered a round. The bullet struck Luke at the tip of his breastbone. Luke jolted backward and bent double. The barrel of his Colt had not even left his holster. To the surprise of Charlie Grasser, Diego Alvarado had drawn with nearly equal speed. Don Diego's Obregon slug chewed a nasty trough across Grasser's left shoulder after breaking the collarbone. To his right, Luke struggled feebly to free his six-gun and get off a shot. Alvarado's 45 spat another chunk of hot lead, which only missed Grasser because he spun to his left toward the welcome void of an alley. Dying on his feet, Luke Horner managed to draw at last and send a bullet speeding toward the fastidious rancher. He missed, but Smoke Jensen didn't. Smoke put a shot into the top of Luke Horner's head, which blasted the second-rate gunfighter off this earth. But by then, Charlie Grasser had found the safety of the alley and sped off. A scant minute later, Sheriff Banner arrived and took in the body of Luke Horner.
Well, shooting snakes again, Jensen?
Yeah, you might say that. One got away.
Diego Alvarado stepped forward, replacing his three expended cartridge casings.
I wounded him. Too bad he could run faster than I could shoot.
Do either of you think you could identify him?
Oh, yes. He'll have his left arm in a sling. I am positive I got him in the collarbone.
Hank Banner listened to their account of how the shootout had begun.
Remember, you make good and sure that they force the action every time. I'd not like to lock up a friend or friends.
Afterwards, on the road to Rancho de la Gloria, Smoke Jensen and Diego Alvarado discussed the possibility that there would be another personal attack upon them. Diego weighed all Smoke said about these sorts of gun hawks and offered a prophecy.
You are probably right, amigo, but Satterley has so far kept it rather quiet. He does not seem ready to force the issue. I think it will be some time before any more of his ladrones come after you or I.
Suddenly, a plume of white powder smoke spurted upward in a thicket of mesquite, and a bullet took the sombrero from Diego's head.
Shit!
Smoke fisted his .45 Colt and returned fire. He drubbed Cougar's flanks with his round knob spurs and started away from the hidden gunman, only to find the way blocked by more of their kind. In a swirl of dust, Smoke Jensen released his pack horse Hardy and then charged the obstruction. He burst through the fog of dust and powder smoke and blazed away at point-blank range. Two men left their saddles in rapid succession. A third clutched at his suddenly useless right arm. Smoke didn't stop there. He whirled and disappeared into the miasma. Popped out on the flank of the mesquite barricade, flanking the ambush. Garth Thompson snapped off a round and nicked Diego Alvarado in the fleshy part of his left upper arm. Diego squinted at the pain that shot through him and coolly pumped around into another of the outlaws.
Break up! Fall back, boys! Scatter!
Smoke and Diego joined up and went in pursuit of two of the hard cases who had chosen the roadway as the easiest route of escape.
We have them trapped between us and the ranch. They will not get far, amigo.
Might be, but will anyone be expecting them?
We are close enough that the shots will have been heard. Someone will be watching. It's too bad the others went another way.
Not for long when we get to question these two.
Yeah!
Within 10 minutes, they had ridden through the low scud of red dust stirred by the hooves of the horses ridden by the fleeing men. That ground eaten pace, Smoke and Diego soon saw the backs of the two outlaws. One was on the ground, drawn up in a fetal position. The other, his horse shot out from under him, used the fallen animal as a breastwork. Although wounded, he fired over the saddle at unseen adversaries as Smoke closed the gap between himself and the member of the Quinn gang. When Smoke and Diego came into clear view, whoever was keeping the outlaw pinned down ceased fire. All resistance left him, and he laid down his revolver and raised his hands.
I'm getting up! Don't shoot me!
Seems as how you tried like hell to do just that to us.
I was just following orders. It weren't nothing personal.
When someone throws lead at me, I take it damn personal.
It was then that Alejandro Alvarado showed himself, along with three of the vaqueros. He extended a hand.
It is good to see you again, Smoke. Papa said you would come.
He made it sound irresistible. Let's take a look at the fish you caught.
Roughly, they searched the outlaw, supervised by Smoke. Two knives, a stubby-barreled Hopkins and Allen 38 Bulldog revolver, and a .41 rimfire Derringer appeared from the voluminous clothing of the miscreant.
Damn. Looks like whatever you lack in skill, you make up for in sneaky armament.
Who are you, mister? You tore through our ambush like a bull through a corral of steers.
Folks call me Smoke. Smoke Jensen.
Oh, horseshit. That ain't fair. It just ain't fair. How's we to know you around here anywhere?
Chalk it up to bad luck. Now, my good friend here, Don Diego, and I would like to know who you work for.
You'll never hear it from me.
Oh, I'll hear it when I want to. Although I don't think I really need to. Don Diego has told me all about your boss, Whitewater Paddy Quinn.
Ever so slightly, the gunman's eyes narrowed, and tension lines sprang up that did not come from the bullet wound in his thigh. He pressed his lips tightly together.
If he won't confirm that, Alejandro, just kill him.
All right! Yes, you're right, goddamn you! And when Paddy Quinn finds out what you done to us, Jensen, he'll be down on you like stink on a skunk.
I can hardly wait.
Amigo, we still have a league to ride to the Estancia.
Then we better get going. I trust you can deal with this mess, Alejandro.
Si, any day, Smoke.
Smoke was met by the entire Alvarado flock. The youngest, a totally naked toddler of two, crawled up on Smoke's knee and patted him on the cheek. Horrified by the overly familiar conduct of her infant son, Senora Lydia Alvarado rushed forward to pluck the boy from his perch.
I am so sorry.
No problem at all.
But you are caballero. You should not be bothered by the prattling of children.
He's no burden, Dona Lydia. I remember my own at that age.
Oh, but they are all grown, yes?
Well, all but one my Sally and I adopted not long ago. He's 13.
Ah, burdensome age. Excuse me. I will leave you gentlemen to your tequila and old campaigns.
I will tell you what I believe is behind Clifton Satterley's determination to secure all of the land for 20 miles around Taos. It is greed, plain and simple. Somehow he has found a way to make a profit out of land that sells for 25 cents an acre due to its poor quality of soil. In its natural state, nothing much grows here, except for cactus and mesquite. Perhaps he has learned, as I have, of the value of irrigation, but I do not believe that is the case. He means to plunder the land and leave it desolate. There is gold in the mountains. Not much, but enough to attract a greedy man. There is also the cattle that I and others raise. The price of beef is going up now that it's been made more tender and palatable to the Eastern taste. Satterley's entire assets, at least those I have been able to discover, are not worth more than $100,000. The sale of our cattle would increase his holdings by tenfold. There is five times that value in the timber on the Tua Reservation. Although the land is protected by your government in Washington, treaties have been broken in the past and will be again, given enough money changes hands.
You don't put much trust in the United States government, amigo.
No more than I did in that of Ciudad Mexico. Politicians are... politicians. It is the nature of government to become more intrusive, more controlling of people's lives and their property. Yours, perhaps, less than many others. But who knows what the future may hold? Satterley is a law unto himself. Therefore, I believe that he is not so much empire building as empire looting.
That's a strong accusation. Now, why would he want to acquire the town of Taos?
It is the seat of power in this part of New Mexico. We are far removed by mountains as well as distance from the government in Santa Fe. Our governor is a good man. I regret that I cannot say the same for some of those around him. Recently, there was an affair that is being called the Lincoln County War. Governor Wallace offered amnesty to those of both sides. Secretly, some of those in power put out the word that certain among the combatants were to be killed upon their surrender. It seems that their continued existence would prove an embarrassment to some of our politicians. But I digress, old friend. You are here to determine exactly what it is Satterley intends, and if it is illegal or harmful to the best interests of the people, to put an end to it. Oh, that sounds remarkably like a politician, does it not? Forgive me. You came here of your own accord. If I have burdened you with too great a load, it is only because of my great concern.
If you'd put too much on my plate, I'd be riding out now.
It is the people I am concerned about. Many of those who live around Taos work for me, or have sons and daughters who do. And Alejandro has business interests in the town. Then there are the Indians. Do you know that they rose up one time and slaughtered all the Spanish living around here? They are capable of doing so again. But now let us go in to enjoy dinner. Fernando has roasted us a whole small pig. It will make excellent carnitas de puerco. I'm sure you will enjoy it.
Anything Fernando cooks is an equal to my Sally's best effort. I know I'll like it.
Dohatsa tugged at his forelock and looked down at his moccasin-clad feet in the manner his people had been taught since the Spanish first came. He was not conscious of his hand extended with palm up. The small bag of coins that dropped into it felt heavy indeed. It made Dohatsa glow inwardly.
Ha! That's me good lad, Dohatsa. Now, you'll go back to your mud houses and stir up some mischief for me, won't you now?
Paddy Quinn grinned at the young Tua warrior. With another nod, Dohatsa tucked the money behind the wide yellow sash that he wore over his shirt tail and loincloth. Then he turned and trotted off toward the distant Tua Pueblo located north and a bit west of Taos. Whitewater Paddy Quinn turned his horse then and walked away in the opposite direction. He had other errands to perform. There was that fat, stupid policeman in towels who had to be paid his monthly stipend, who reminded Paddy of another lawman he'd known. The reason Paddy had decided to come to America. Dead policemen, even a white pudding of a Bobby in Dublin town, raised quite a row. In Boston, he had quickly learned that the fine art of bribery got one far more benefit than did muscle. Not a copper, it had seemed, that wasn't on the take. But inevitably, Paddy had encountered the exception to the rule. A lad from the old sod at that, John Preston Sullivan, which was what had brought Patrick Michael Quinn to the West. No doubt Sullivan still searched the alleyways of Boston for him. 10 years to the day, Quinn was now the boss of the largest gang of cutthroats, highwaymen, and robbers on the frontier, which reminded him that Garth Thompson and some of the lads had something on for later that afternoon.
Oh, that ought to stir up things just a tad.
Smoke Jensen rode at ease along Diego Alvarado. The hacienda had put out flankers and two men on point for protection, even here on his own huge ranch. Those visible rode with their rifles across their thighs and were in sight of others farther out. It had been so, Don Diego had explained, since the first raid by the rustlers.
It was like this the last time I visited, if I recall correctly.
Yes, los indios were raiding.
And in your father's time?
There was a war. We had you gringos to combat, if you recall.
And your grandfather?
The revolution against the Spanish. My family fought for Mexico.
So this bodyguard arrangement is nothing new.
I thought not to make you uncomfortable. This is a cruel, wild land, most unforgiving. Not all of the danger comes from two-legged foes.
Smoke saw a flock of sheep up ahead, herded by half a dozen small boys ranging from 10 to 12. It made him think of Ian McGregor.
Diego, I have a friend who's looking for work. He speaks Spanish and rides well, but he's a farmer's son. Promised him I'd ask you if you had need of anyone like that on your ranch.
Enrique Toledo is growing old. His bones ache him. Perhaps he would welcome a younger assistant. When would this young man want to start?
After I've taken care of this business with Satterley.
He is secretly involved in this?
In a manner of speaking. He's looking into some things for me. I haven't seen him in a couple of days.
I will suggest something to Enrique. I am sure he will welcome the idea of help.
Meanwhile, 20 miles outside of Taos, a Butterfield stage made its way along a narrow, rutted trace. Just then, a large mesquite bush toppled down a rocky slope to block the road. Its sudden appearance didn't rattle the driver, however. But suddenly, swarming out of defiles and crevices, a dozen men in the colorful loose clothing and braided headbands of the Pueblo Indians closed around the coach. They wore high-top moccasins and long black hair. All of them carried either bows and arrows, rifles, or revolvers, all at the ready. The driver turned to the express guard.
Engines don't rob coaches.
No, they don't.
At once, the shotgun rider brought up his short-barreled L.C. Smith 10 gauge.
God damn it!
The shot splattered the shoulder of one pseudo-engine.
Oh, son of a bitch, shot me!
Help! Ain't one of them's an engine!
The driver reached for his six gun.
Let's fill these! Ow!
An arrow hit his chest and skewered his heart. He folded sideways. The guard immediately dropped his shotgun.
Don't shoot! I ain't...
While two of the Quinn gang held the head stalls of the lead team, another ambled his horse over to the coach.
You get out! Put up hands! Give money, much money!
Quickly, the outlaws gathered the valuables from the passengers while others released the draft team. After securing the strong box, the members of the Quinn gang rode off, scattering the stage horses ahead of them. They left the frightened, demoralized passengers to fend for themselves. A portly man in a green checkered suit expressed his astonishment.
Well, I never. Indians actually robbing a stagecoach? We have to get to the way station and find help.
Someone should go on to Taos.
Lady, we're on foot. It's too far to Taos. We'll find someone at the relay post with a horse. Then we'll report these Indians to the law at Taos.
On a low knoll behind his palatial hacienda outside Santa Fe, shaded by an ancient cottonwood, Clifton Satterly watched the attractive young woman. Martha Estes was his house guest, the daughter of one of his business associates. That didn't serve as a deterrent for Satterly, however, whose lust guided him. His wife had decided to return east and visit her family, so he knew himself to be free to pursue and conquer the lovely Martha. And to do so, he had set forth on a subtle seduction. From her position, where she exercised her horse, Martha Estes studied Clifton Satterly from under the brim of a rakishly cocked feminine version of a man's top hat. The bright green crushed velvet head ornament with its scarlet feather contrasted nicely with the red cape and riding skirt of the same material. She'd become well aware that Satterly was engaged in a skillful seduction, and it amused her. Why all the elaborate preamble when all he needed to do was ask? He needn't have given her pearls nor the promise of a luxurious house in Taos. She would have happily fallen into bed with him on the afternoon of her arrival. In fact, her loins ached and throbbed with desire. Clifton represented power, raw, naked strength, and the willingness to employ it. Martha had hungered for him since her 11th year, when he and her father had become associated in some slightly shady enterprises. Now, 8 years later, her craving had not diminished. If anything, it had grown to unbearable dimension. She abandoned her musings to give Clifton a cheery wave and rode up to join him.
You are a magnificent horsewoman, Martha.
Thank you, Clifton. It is one of my lesser accomplishments.
Martha lowered low silver blonde lashes over cobalt eyes in a coy invitation.
Let's proceed on, shall we? There is a charming little place I want to show you.
We'll picnic there?
Yes, my dear Martha. And while away the hotter part of the afternoon. The natives call it siesta. I heartily recommend it.
Half an hour's ride brought him to the reverse slope of a large knob. There, stately ancient Palo Duro trees shaded a trio of deep tanks which had formed in depressions of solid rock. Clifton Satterly dismounted and helped Martha from the cumbersome side saddle. He held the heavy picnic basket while Martha spread a blanket. He came to kneel beside her then and put out their repast. Martha's eyes sparkled as she took in the elaborate fare.
Pâté de foie, sliced ham, roast beef, pickled tongue. Oh, so many things.
You'll make me fat and unattractive.
Oh, never, my dear. Many men are strongly enamored of full-figured women. I am myself, I have to admit. Though I will say that you wear sveltness to perfection.
You flatter me shamelessly. But I am hungry. A morning's ride always stimulates my appetite.
I brought wine.
How thoughtful. I hope you brought a corkscrew.
I thought of everything.
Martha began filling her plate while Clifton opened the bottle. Then he availed himself of the splendid eats and poured wine for both of them. Sunlight sparkled off the clear water of the tanks.
When do I get to see my house in Taos?
Soon. Within 3 days, I should think.
Wasn't it once owned by a Mexican family?
Yes, it was. A family named Figueroa. They, named a price I could hardly refuse.
Affecting a jaunty swagger he didn't even recognize as his own, Ian McGregor pushed through the glass-beaded curtain that formed the entryway of Cantina Jalisco in Taos. Half a dozen hard-faced men had gathered at one end of the bar. They drank beer from glazed clay pots. Even to Mac's untutored eyes, they all appeared to pay deference to a burly, barrel-chested man at the center of the group.
beer.
The bartender took in the 6-gun at Mac's hip. Mac lifted the foam-capped container in salute to the Irish-looking beefy man and pulled off a long swallow. It nearly choked him, but he didn't let on since he felt all eyes were turned to him. He walked closer to the hard cases, and in particular the man in the boulder.
Might you be the gentleman known as Paddy Quinn?
And who might it be that's asking?
I'm known as Mac. Name's Ian McGregor.
Oh, a fellow Celt as I live and breathe. Ha, it is said that the clan McGregor defended Queen Mary and the faith. Would you be one of those McGregors?
Aye.
Oh, and why is it you'd be wanting Paddy Quinn?
I hear you're hiring gun hands for a man named Satter Lee.
Now, we don't be mentioning certain names in no public places. Say rather that I be hiring for myself, you should.
Well then, for yourself?
And what if I be? You don't look dry behind the ears.
You'd have heard of Billy Bunny.
Ah, now that's horse shite if you try to pat yourself off as Billy the Kid.
No, I'm not. Billy was not yet dry behind the ears when he killed his 6th man. I'm not in his class, but I'm good with a gun.
Oh, are you now? Well, now, suppose we just go out behind this place and you show me.
I'm not calling you out, Mr. Quinn. All I say is that I'm fast with a gun and I hit what I shoot at.
Quinn stepped forward away from the bar and patted Mac on one shoulder.
No, I was thinking of whiskey bottles, or better still, beer bottles. They make smaller targets. One of me boys could throw them up, say, 2 at a time, and you could draw and break them both before one hits the ground.
Fine.
Come along, then. Hey, Paco, we're going to take some of your empties out and make little pieces of glass out of them.
The bartender shrugged. Behind the saloon, the gunman stood to one side, except for one who reached to a stack of wooden cartons and extracted 2 beer bottles. He faced quarter front to Ian McGregor. Paddy Quinn was at Mac's side.
All right now, when I nod, Hubert there will throw the bottles in the air. You draw and fire at will.
With that, Quinn stepped behind Mac so the youth could not see him give the signal. Not hesitating for a second, Paddy nodded to Hubert. 2 beer bottles sailed into the air. The moment they came into Mac's line of sight, he made his move. Before the 2 containers reached the apex of their arc, he had a 6-gun halfway out of the holster. The gun was back in Mac's holster before Quinn could recover from his involuntary blink.
By God, it's fast you are! Only one little thing there is. I wonder how you would perform if the target was shooting back at you.
A friend of mine and I would have jumped on the way here to Taos. 4 men. I killed one of them, and Joe took care of the others.
Aha, who'd you say that was?
You wouldn't know him. Joe Evans from over at Texas Way, where I come from.
Oh, he your age?
No, sir. He's older. Around 25.
Would he be looking for the same thing you came after?
No, sir. Mr. Quinn, he rode on to Santa Fe.
Well, then. Looks like we got us only one more good gun hand. But you'll do, young McGregor. At first, I'll be putting you with someone more experienced, all right? At least until you get your feet wet, so to speak. You'll be paid $60 a month, ammunition bought for you. Later, there'll be a share of any spoils we bring in. Now then, go settle up with wherever you've been staying and meet us 10 miles out on the road to Cuesta.
Come on.
Hank Banner studied the fat, sweaty man in a dusty green checkered suit as he entered the sheriff's office.
Sheriff, the stage from Albuquerque was robbed outside of Taos about 20 miles back. I was on it. The guard and driver are both dead. It was Indians who did it.
Banner had strong doubts that the Tua or any of the Pueblo Indians had taken to robbing stages.
You got a good look at these highwaymen?
Oh yes, long black hair, headbands, floppy clothing, swarthy skin, mean as hell.
What way did they ride when they left?
To the west.
Towards San Vicente?
I don't know the area.
There's a Pueblo mission out that way. But the San Vicente Pueblos are even more peaceful than the Tuas.
They spoke poor English and rode bareback.
Anyone could talk funny and ride bareback. Did they speak any Spanish or Indian tongue?
No, come to think of it, all they spoke was English.
I think you've been had. Sounds to me like white road agents done up to look like Indians. At least that's the way I'm gonna look into it.
Excuse me.
Banner strode to the door.
Wally, come in here.
Wally Gower, who had been lurking outside the door to learn any gems of news he could sell to the editor of the Taos Clarion, popped around the door frame.
Yes, sir?
I want you to ride out to Rancho de la Gloria. Ask for Smoke Jensen and tell him to please come in. Say I have something interesting for him to look into.
Yes, sir. I'll do it right now.
Good. There'll be two bits in it for you.
Gosh, I'll never get more than a nickel.
You will this time. There's a lot of trouble brewing out there. Now get along.
Now Wally Gower led an ideal life for a kid. He was footloose and, for the most part, unsupervised. His father had been injured in a mining accident several years ago in Colorado. While his father remained unable to work and stayed at home to care for the seven children, his mother did custom alterations and general sewing for Señora Montes, a fashionable Spanish lady who owned a large women's clothing store in Taos. When school let out for the summer, Wally gleefully abandoned studies, shoes, and often shirt to hang around town doing odd jobs for the money it brought in for the family. A lot of his time went to swimming with friends or pulling slippery rainbow trout from the icy creeks fed by the snow melt in the Sangre de Cristo range. He liked it most when the sheriff had something for him to do, though. The lawman paid way better than anyone else. Wally had a pony he could use for his assignments. It was a small, shaggy Mustang and only partly broken to saddle. But Wally loved spuds with all his heart. Had it been anyone else atop that little horse, it would have exploded into crow hops that would have unseated any but the most expert horse breakers. Outside the western edge of town, Wally reached the scattered fringe of small, poor Mexican adobe homes. That was where he found out that life in Taos had drastically changed for the foreseeable future. Three hard cases leaned against a low adobe wall with two split rails atop. When Wally approached, the lean, tallest one eased upright and stepped into the road. He raised a hand.
Whoa up, sonny. Where do you think you're going?
A damn quick thinker. Wally invented something he hoped would be believed.
To where my pa works.
Where's that?
The Bradford's B-Bar X.
He ain't come through since we've been here.
Oh, no. He goes out before dawn.
Well, there ain't nobody going out of town from now on without our say-so.
But my pa will beat my tail if I don't bring him his coat. He's got night guard tonight.
That's your problem, kid. You go on back now. Get lost. Tell that sheriff friend of yours nothing.
Yes, sir.
But Wally did report back to Hank Banner, who promised to check out the matter and suggested Wally ride out the other side of town. He made it half a mile out of Taos this time, where four of the biggest, meanest-looking men Wally had ever seen in his 10 years blocked the entire road. A line of people on foot, in wagons, and on horseback had formed in front of them. The surly fellas were allowing free entry to town, but denying departure to all except for the poorest campesinos and mission Indians. Patiently, though with mounting apprehension, Wally waited his turn. He tried his taking a coat to Paul story again and was turned back again. On his own, Wally tried the South Road out of town next. This time he believed he had it all figured out. When he saw an angry-looking farmer and his family headed for town in a wagon, Wally hailed.
Excuse me, were you folks turned away?
Yes, son, we were. How did you know?
I got turned back two places already. What's going on?
Some bad folks up there, boy. Best thing for you to do is turn around and go back now.
How far to where they are?
Quarter mile, maybe a little more. Beyond that bend yonder.
Thank you, sir.
Wally turned Spud's nose yet again and cut across a field in the direction of Pacheco Creek. Keeping constantly alert, Wally looked to the thread on his left as he progressed through a cornfield and into a pasture beyond. He didn't see the men, who he now knew to be nothing more than outlaws, so he felt confident that they could not see him. A line of cottonwoods and aspen marked the course of the creek. He pulled up inside the screen and leaned down to pat Spuds on the neck.
You're gonna get cold, Spuds. So am I. We gotta swim all the way around those fellers. When we get out of the creek, I'll rub you down and dry off, and then we'll cut to the southwest and head for the Alvarado spread.
Wally reached in his hip pocket and produced a parsnip, which he fed to Spuds. Dismounting, Wally led his pony to the creek bank and stepped gingerly out on the sand and pebble-strewn stream bed. They stayed in the shallows for a while, the water frigid and hip-high on Wally. When he gauged they had come close to being opposite the hard cases, he urged Spuds out into the current, and they both swam past, goose flesh forming under Wally's shirt. When he reached the spot he considered safe, Wally swam cross-current until he gained footing. Spuds reached solid underpinning first and surged forward past the boy's slim shoulders. Wally stumbled behind. On the bank at last, boy and beast stood shivering.
That was colder than I thought, boy. But we gotta keep moving.
Ten minutes after Wally Gower arrived at Rancho de la Gloria, Smoke Jensen and 15 vaqueros rode out for town. The boy kept stationed close beside Smoke, his chest puffed up with pride. They soon came upon several disgruntled people who had been turned back from town, and from them, they learned more details of the roadblocks.
Beats all hell. There were six of them when we made to enter town. Told me and the boys to turn about and hightail it for home. Said that the town was closed till further notice. Who could do a thing like that?
From what I've heard, it's Whitewater Paddy Quinn.
That no account. Claims to be foreman for some outfit called CS Enterprises. Common outlaw, you ask me.
Smoke and the vaqueros rode on. By and by, they made it to a point where they could observe the roadblock from a distance. Smoke studied the activity, noting that people were no longer queuing up to attempt to leave town. Smoke sent Wally back beyond range and turned to the Mexican cowboys.
First things first. We're going to take out these banditos, then move around to each road entering town and do the same. And remember, we're not here to kiss them. Adelante, muchachos.
Smoke led the way as they charged down on the outlaws ahead. With weapons at the ready, they clothed in a cloud of red dust. Quinn's men turned at the sound of pounding hooves.
Rein in and turn around. Nobody gets into town today. This is your last chance. Do it now, or you'll be hurting.
Smoke halted first and took careful aim. He intentionally shot the hard case and charged through the left shoulder. The man raised his own six gun.
Well, I gave him a chance.
The mountain man put a bullet through the chest of the outlaw this time. At once, the gunman's underlings opened fire.
Open fire!
The vaqueros sent a storm of hot lead into the rank that partitioned the road. Dust churned up to mingle with powder smoke and obscure the view. Then, on the far side of the melee, a horse sprinted free, its rider looking hysterical.
Get out before they kill us all!
All right, all right. That was perfect. And we'll go on to the next. Alejandro, you take half our men and come at them at an angle. We'll take them head on. No time to waste until we clean out all these skunks.